Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on current events in the economy right after this. You know, when the federal income tax was launched back in 1913, the tax was levied only on the super wealthy, the richest one-half of 1% of our population with a top tax rate of only 7%. Well, today, of course, the fears of those early opponents of the tax have been more than fully realized. By the end of Herbert Hoover's term, the top rate had jumped to 60%. And by the time Franklin D. Roosevelt was done, the top rate was over 90%, and the tax had been dramatically expanded to seize the incomes of the middle class for the first time. In 1913, the average family had to work until January 30th before earning enough to satisfy the tax man at every level. This year, the average American family had to work through May 12th in order to earn enough to pay their federal, state, and local tax bills. Now, when we compare this to the plight of medieval serfs, says economist Daniel J. Mitchell, they only had to give the lord of the manor a third of their output and they were considered slaves. Well, what does that make us today? This income tax and Social Security tax violate three of the Ten Commandments and eight statutes of the Old Covenant, including our English common law. The income tax and Social Security tax are two criminal activities. The income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and Social Security is the eighth plank. That's why I contend that you owe it to yourself to at least ask this question: do I really want to participate in this kind of criminal activity? If you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto that email and send an email request for your free general law CD package if you're not online. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Hey, we're talking about current events in the economy from the International Forecaster. Remember, that's put out by Bob Chapman. The International Forecaster comes out twice a week, and it's about 30 pages each time. Sometimes it's 40 or 48 pages. Sometimes it's 20 or 25 or 28. It kind of varies, you know, from week to week. Depends, I guess, on how much he's got to say or report on. I rank at number one. I take five newsletters here at the law school, and I think it's probably the best, the most informative. You know, anytime you, if you went out and looked at five cars, you'd rank five cars, number one, two, three, four, five. All five of them are probably good. I think all five of these newsletters that I get here are good. And I think this is just number one. I recommend to all of my students that they subscribe to at least one newsletter. And the reason for that is that the news that you get from Scott Pelley, you know, Scott's a nice guy. God love him. everybody like Scott Pelley and Brian Williams. And but the problem is those boys work for the mainstream media, and they report on what they're told to report on. There's not an original thought in their heads. Never has been, ain't now, and ain't never going to be. Not as long as they want a paycheck. Now, nice guys that they are, and they're reporting on what's actually going on in the world. You know, they tell you all about the trite events that are going on that don't really amount to a hill of beans. They're curious, they're interesting, keep you up to date, tell you what's going on in the world in Afghanistan and so on. But if you want to know what's going on in the economy, if you want to know where the world's headed, and what's going on behind the scenes, and who's raping, robbing, and pillaging who next, and getting away with it, you need a private newsletter. McIlvaney Report's good. Franklin Sanders is good. They're all different. You know, I can't tell you, you know, that if you get one, you're going to get political news. I'm looking at one here called World Affairs Brief, put out by Joel Skousen. And, God, it's good. I mean, this guy Skousen's really good. He doesn't have a whole lot on economic news. Once in a while, he has a little bit in there. But mainly it's political in nature. And if you're interested in politics, that's probably the place you want to go. But Bob Chapman here covers politics. He covers the economy. He covers the stock markets and gold and silver and chicanery that's going on and current news, and you know, some science is in there every once in a while. It's just got a hell of a lot of good information in it. Now, there's a story in here about a whistleblower who blows the whistle on a bank called State Street Corporation. And I think that it's valuable for all of us, and there's a lesson to be learned and some money to be made. Let me show you how you can save yourself a lot of money, and depending upon, of course, how much money you have to save or lose in the banks, I'll read the story to you, and then we'll make a little commentary on it, and I'll show you what I do. Not that I'm trying to get you to do what I do. I don't care what you do one way or the other, but I read these stories, and people call the law school here quite often, and they say, "My God, I'm getting ripped off over here by so-and-so, and what am I going to do about that, you know?" When I open school, one of the first things I ask is, how many of you people do business with the mafia? And I've never had anybody raise their hand, you know, like, yeah, I do business with the mafia on a regular basis. I've never had, in the 27 years I've been teaching the school, not one person has ever raised his hand and said, yes, I do business with the mafia. So my second question is, I ask, well, why not? Why don't you do business with the mafia? Cosa Nostra, Murder Incorporated. And everybody, they have a variety of answers, but basically, well, it's a criminal enterprise. I don't do business with criminals. And I say, oh, well, it makes sense. I say, well, how many of you do business with government? And everybody raises their hands. Everybody's got a driver's license and a marriage license and birth certificates, and if they're not on welfare, they're paying into welfare. And if they're not, they're paying into taxes and so on. Everybody raises their hand. They all do business with government. I say, how many of you busy people in here do business with banks? Everybody raises their hands. And I say everybody. Once in a while, you'll find a guy that doesn't do business with any banks. It's rare. I mean, you know, you put 10 people in class and 9 of them do business with banks, or 8 of them do. Once in a while, you'll find one. But and I say, well, why do you do business with banks? Well, because I have to. It's my business. I couldn't run my business without the bank. I have to do banking. It's a requirement. I don't know how to do business without a bank. And I point out to them. I say, well, now, when was the last time the mafia ever stole any money or took any money from you? And everybody pauses and they say, well, never. The mafia has never, Cosa Nostra, the mafia, Murder Incorporated, they've never caused me any damage. I have yet to find one student in this school in 27 years that's ever been damaged by 5 cents by the Mafia, Cosa Nostra, or Murder Incorporated. Not a dime has ever been lost to that murderous criminal institution. Then I point out, I say, well, how many of you have lost some money or been screwed, blued, or tattooed, or been dissatisfied with your relationship with government or the banks? Everybody, 100%, raise their hands and say, yes, the government has screwed me here, cheated me there. Yes, the banks have overcharged me here and screwed me over there. And I say, why do you do business with these criminal institutions called banks and government that you all admit have caused you harm, and you refuse to do business with the institution that's never cost you a dime? Now, I'm not here trying to get you to do business with Murder Incorporated or with the Mafia or with some kind of a shakedown, you know, going on in the streets of New York. No, I'm not here promoting one brand of crime over another. I just wanted to point out that government is a criminal institution. Banking is a criminal institution, and you all do business with these two criminal institutions, and you're all bitching about it. I get calls here every week. Somebody is complaining to me. Every day, somebody's complaining about some government chicanery going on, or some bank or lending institution or some big corporation, you know, that's screwing them over. And I just kind of shake my head and I say, well, you know, you made your bed, partner. Now go sleep in it. Well, here's the story. A case filed by whistleblowers on behalf of pension plans for Massachusetts cities and towns in a widening foreign exchange inquiry alleges that State Street Corporation defrauded customers across the country of $400 million per year for a decade. Okay, well, let's take $400 million. Times 10. Well, that's $4 billion. So the State Street Bank. Now, this is just one bank. They're not bitching about Bank of America or J.P. Morgan or Citicorp or, you know, or Century Bank of Gainesville, Missouri. But they're complaining about this one bank. And I could tell you, do you believe that this is the only bank that does this? Just State Street, that's the only criminal banking institution in the country. All the rest of them are just as honest as a church choir boy. Huh? Do you believe that? Or do you think that maybe all of them kind of steal just about the same amount in the same way and probably get away with it? This is a whistleblower here, so they've been getting away with it for years. Remember, it's over the last 10 years. Do you think that they've only been doing this for the last 10 years? Don't you think maybe 20, 30, 50, or 90 years is more in line with what they've been doing? And the statute of limitations limits this to 7, 8, or 10 years, and that's why we're suing them over the last 10 years, because that's what we can collect on. And what they stole back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s we can't collect on, but what they stole over the last 10 years, maybe we can get some of that back. So I just wanted to point out that this isn't the only bank that's out there stealing from you. And then it's not the only bank that's going to continue stealing from you in the future. And you got to do business with the bank, don't you? I mean, you have to. Now, I don't, and there's a few other people that don't do business with banks. I'm one of the few guys in the country. I'm not complaining about Bank of America. I'm not complaining about State Street or J.P. Morgan or anybody else. I don't do business with them, they don't steal from me, and I don't complain about them. It's just that simple and just that easy. Well, the lawsuit was filed with the help of fraud investigator Harry Markopoulos in 2009 and later unsealed, and it purports to represent the interests of nearly 300 municipalities, including the city of Boston. So it's not just small towns, I mean, it's a big city. Plus the Massachusetts Turnpike Authority and the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority. All of these big institutions have been doing business with this bank, and this bank has been screwing them over and stealing money. Now, such whistleblower cases typically begin with a confidential appeal to prosecutors to join the case. In this matter, the Attorney General, Martha Coakley, but Coakley decided not to pursue the case by law. It later became public. The Globe has obtained a copy of the unsealed court record. Boston-based State Street declined to comment specifically on the Massachusetts lawsuit. A company statement said, "We continue to vigorously defend the allegations regarding our indirect FX services made in the civil proceedings commenced against us, and we offer clients and their investment managers a range of FX execution options and transparencies as to our pricing methods." Now, the whistleblowers allege the 300 municipalities potentially affected by State Street overcharges on foreign exchange trades held $17.8 billion in assets for 195,000 current and future retirees. They said the funds, collectively, had 17% of their assets in foreign stocks, or about $3 billion. Now, the lawsuit and others like it filed around the country allege that State Street overcharged their clients on millions of small foreign currency trades by trading at the best available price of the day, and then they told their clients that they had traded at lower prices, and then they pocketed the difference. Well, let me pause right here. Let's suppose that, and we're talking about foreign exchange trades and paper currency. Here in the International Forecaster, twice a week, there will be a page that's dedicated just to all of these myriad market transactions. And they'll point out, for instance, that the dollar is trading at 76.0017. And then they'll show you the British pound. It's 156.0017, or, you know, something on that order. And then the Swiss franc and the euro and the Japanese yen and so on. Those are currency trades. Well, here's your bank, say. And your bank has your retirement funds, and they're invested, let's say, in some municipal bonds in Germany, which is fine. You know, you got to invest your money someplace. Now, those bonds are bought, sold, and traded by your fund manager, you know, from time to time. And when you have to convert from euros to dollars, there's a transaction fee. Banks charge you a little transaction fee for doing that, and that's not a theft. No, nothing wrong with that. But let's suppose that the transaction is made at 10 o'clock in the morning, and the dollar is at 76, and the euro is at 138. Then there's a transaction fee that goes on top of that. But let's suppose at the end of the day, though, the dollar is at 77 and the euro is at 135. Do they give you credit for the time when they made the transaction at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is called intraday? Or do they give you credit for the transaction at the end of the day, which is something different than what it was at 10:30 in the morning when they actually made the trade? And maybe there's just a little bit of profit to be made here. Do they give you the profit, or do they take the profit for themselves using your money? And that's what they're doing, and that's what they're accused of. Now, that's against the law. You're not supposed to do that. And, of course, if they get caught, well, then they got to pay some fines. And you hear once in a while where some bank, you know, has to pay $50 million in fines. And then what happens is they steal $10 billion, then they get caught, and they have to pay $50 million in fines, which means that they get to keep the $9.95 billion that they stole. They can keep that. And the government gets the other $50 million, and you get screwed. But what do you think of that? And then you say to me, "Well, I have to do business with the bank, you know, because it's what?" I haven't done business with a bank since 1978. Now, let's see. This is 88, 98, 108. That's 33 years. I have not done business with a bank for 33 years. They were lying to me and stealing from me 33 years ago. And I suppose if I would have stayed in the banking industry or stayed with the banks, they would have been stealing from me for 33 years. I saved whatever it was that they were going to steal from me for 33 years. So I'm not complaining. Now, if you're complaining, well, you know, that may be your problem in life. But, you know, you went down and opened that account. You're the one that's doing business with them. And so here you're talking about the city of Boston. Now, the city of Boston opened an account there, and they've deposited their employees' retirement funds in the bank. And they've probably hired the bank or some market money fund to invest those dollars in stocks and bonds or, you know, municipal corporations and so on around the world. They probably even have some Greek bonds that you're all going to take it in the short. And ultimately, you're going to take it in the shorts on the German bonds and the French bonds and the American bonds. And everybody that's buying and selling and trading in bonds ultimately is going to lose 90% of what they've got in there. That's been the history of it. It's what's gone on in the past. So I don't see any reason why it's going to be any less or any different today. But here's the article. And you don't see these reported by Brian Williams and Scott Pelley, you know. They don't talk about this. And I think this is pretty important for you and me and everybody else, you know, that does business out here in the real world. Kind of was kind of needful for you and I to know, well, what's happened in the past. And what do we expect to happen now in the future based upon history? I go on to say that in the State Street case, associates against the FX insider tradings. Now, FX stands for currency trades. Tradings members are not named, but Markopoulos has acknowledged it is in his case. He and the other whistleblowers filed a similar case against Bank of New York Mellon in Massachusetts. They also filed a case in New York where the Attorney General last week sued New York BNY Mellon for $2 billion, alleging overbilling for foreign exchange trading. If the money is awarded, it could be distributed to pension funds in New York and to large investors around the country. Bank of New York Mellon denies the New York charges and is fighting them. It had no comment on the Massachusetts allegations. Now, here's what happens in these cases. I'll just tell you how it's going to come out. When the evidence is presented at discovery, both sides will have an opportunity to see, well, will these guys most likely prevail when this goes to trial? And if it's the case, then the bank will come forward and say, well, let's settle. And they'll settle it for 10, 15, 20 cents on the dollar. Nobody will be prosecuted. Nobody will go to jail. If you and I did this kind of fraudulent transaction, they'd lock us up for 20 years. If I did something like this, I'd never get out of jail alive. Now, these guys do this. They have been doing it for the last nearly 100 years. And they buy their way out of it. It's, you know, they've got the best law firms. They donate to campaigns. And so they buy and they own the senators and representatives that make the laws here. And then, like this Coakley now isn't going to join the case. Do you suppose that maybe the bank, you know, donates heavily to her campaign reelection fund? It probably is the case. And that's the way that game is played. It's been played that way for years. It's going to continue to be played that way. And the safest course of action is just don't do business with them. You know, just like the mafia, you know, when I started my conversation today, I said, hey, how many of you do business with the mafia? Well, the answer is none of you do, and none of you have been raped, robbed, or pillaged by the mafia. Now, if you do business with the mafia, they will rape, rob, and pillage you. They always have, and they're going to continue. So our defense is we don't do business with the mafia. We stay away from them. Now, the reason the banks are raping, robbing, and pillaging you is because you do business with them. And the day that you stop doing business with the bank, the day that you close your checking account and your savings account and your mortgage account, and you stop doing business, and you just do business in cash. Better if you do business in gold and silver, but at least do it in cash. And you'll stop the banks from cheating you. If you don't put your retirement in their control or their hands, now if you've got retirement, you can kiss it goodbye. If you've got a 401k or a Krog plan, I was down at the building materials store the other day, and the lady behind the counter was talking to my wife about $100,000 she has in her 401k. And she asked my wife, well, what would you do? And she said, well, I would cash out of it. And the lady protested, and she said, well, my God, I'd have to pay 20% tax. And my wife said, well, would you rather have 80% of it or none of it? And the lady looked at her like, what do you mean none of it? Well, your 401k is going to be nationalized by the government anyway, and you're going to get an annuity. So they're going to take your 401k today, which is worth 100 cents on the dollar, and give you back some depreciated dollars in the future. They'll give you back the same number of dollars, but the dollars will lose their purchasing power to inflation. So today you can buy 100,000 loaves of hillbilly bread with your $100,000 in your 401k, and 10 or 15, 20 years from now you can buy 50,000 loaves with the same $100,000. You get half as much bread. You'll lose half of what you've got. Now, would you rather take it today and put it in something else? Well, what would I put it in? My wife suggested gold, and she said, I don't know anything about gold. My wife didn't ask her, well, how much do you know about stocks and inflation and percentages? She knows less about stocks, less about percentages, less about inflation than she does about gold and silver, which is nothing. But boys and girls, the price of gold today is 20% higher than it was 1 year ago. The price of silver today is 30% higher than it was 1 year ago. The price of stocks today are less than they were 1 year ago. And inflation over the last year has been 11.4%. Well, I know the government told you that it was 3% or 2%, but your government lies to you all the time. And if you believe your government, well, then it's fine. I'm not trying to get you to disbelieve them. I'm just here to tell you that they lie to you constantly. Now, that means that if you had stocks that paid you 5% dividend, you lost 6% in purchasing power to inflation. Most of you don't understand that and don't grasp it. I'm just telling you that you lost 6% if you have stock. And that's if they're paying 5%. And most of your stocks aren't paying you jack diddly squat. And you're in hopes that your $50 stock is going to be worth $75 at some point in the future when you're going to sell it to somebody else. He buys it at $75 and hopes that it goes up to $100. And sells it, and then you got to pay your capital gain tax on that, and you're losing 10% a year. All right, now can you follow the logic here? You don't have to be smart to take your 401k, cash it out, take your $100,000, pay the $20,000 tax, invest $100,000 in, or excuse me, $80,000 in gold, and 1 year from now you're $80,000. Let's just put that into the little magic box here, 80,000 times 0.120 will be $96,000. So you'd just about have your 100,000 back in 1 year. That's if you got 20% on your 80,000. And then a little bit further on down the road. Now, gold's been averaging around 20 to 25% increase every year for the last 10 years. Silver's been doing a little better than that. It runs around 30% a year. And you don't have to be real smart. And as long as the government is deficit spending, and as long as the government is practicing this fiat currency, gold and silver prices will continue to rise. And there'll be 1,000 and 2,000 and 3,000 and 5,000 and 10,000. In the inflation in Germany in the 1920s, the gold and silver hit millions and billions and billions of dollars an ounce in measured in German marks. And it'll do the same thing in the United States. It does it everywhere there's hyperinflation. The difference is that the gold and silver keep up with inflation, or, you know, pretty close to it. And other things like stocks and bonds lose to inflation. And that's where you're at, is in an inflationary environment. So that's the way that game is played. And if you want to play the game, stick with the program. But here's the moral of the story. Doing business with the bank, as we see here in this article, reported by the International Forecaster, will continue to cost you money. It's cost you a lot in the past, it's costing you money today, and will continue to in the future. As long as you do business with that criminal enterprise called the bank, they're going to steal from you. And that's the nature of the organization. They're thieves, and they steal from their customers. They always have. They do now, and they always will. And if you want to be stolen from, you cannot do business with a better institution than a bank. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. So you don't need to call and ask for it. You can download it. But if you live in Nigeria, Uganda, or the Ivory Coast in Africa, and you listen to us on some pirate radio station or shortwave band, you may not have a computer. You may not even have electricity. Therefore, you might want to write, call, or email. No, you can't email if you don't have a computer. But you can write to us, or you can call us on the telephone. If you can get to one, we'll send you one. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend us. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, they may be political or religious, they can be economic or sectarian, sometimes they're racial, sometimes they're ethnic, they're all partisans of one kind or another. And their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views or the beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So don't blame them. Blame me. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about current events in the economy. State Street Corporation, we just talked about them. Now we got Christmas coming up here, and we've got a big Christmas to talk about. That's over here on page 8. So let me just flip over here to page 8, talking about Christmas and Christmas sales. The retailers, as they always do, are already pronouncing great Christmas sales. Hey, come on in here. We got these great Christmas sales. Now, we warn about this practice every year. The fact that it is starting earlier than usual suggests that all isn't well in retailsville. The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times report that the port traffic suggests that Christmas sales will be disappointing. Ah, disappointing Christmas sales. Well, now, that's going to affect all of us. And the reason that it affects all of us is because many businesses make their money at Christmas. I don't know exactly what the percentage is, but you'll hear some numbers between now and Christmas. You know that 40% of the profit that maybe Macy's makes, for instance, in a year, it comes from their Christmas sales. You know, they're open 365 days a year, but out of those 365 days or 350 days or whatever it happens to be, 40%, 50%, 30%, some big proportion of their sales, their profits, etc. And that, of course, then affects all retail sales across the country, because if you're a worker and you work in retail sales, you know, you're a clerk at Macy's, you're a janitor at Macy's, or you're a contractor of Macy's. You know, maybe you contract with them. Maybe you're a truck driver. And if Macy's doesn't sell as much, then you don't deliver as much in your truck, Mr. Truck Driver. And then that filters its way down through the economy. Poor Christmas sales may not affect you directly today, but it's going to affect you and me and everybody in the country tomorrow. So when I read a story like this, I say, oh my God, this is going to affect little Georgie Gordon in Isabella, Missouri, when Macy's in New York is off 5% in their sales. Yeah, it's going to affect me right here in Isabella. That means that the truck driver who's going to get laid off isn't going to come to school here. He was planning to. But because Macy's is off 5% and Target and Walmart. In fact, I just saw a piece the other day. Walmart was a little concerned. In fact, Walmart's talking about layoffs. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Walmart is talking about laying off some of their management. You know, some of the fat they've got running around the stores. And that's getting down to where it's getting to be serious, you know, when Walmart and Target and Best Buy start laying people off. They're laying them off because you people aren't buying as much at Christmas as you used to. And you're not buying as much at Christmas because you're unemployed or you're afraid you're going to be. And you're reducing your debt. You're not buying more stuff. You're buying less stuff and paying off more on your credit cards. And that's good. And I'm not criticizing you. I'm just pointing out that that has a trickle-down effect. And that trickle-down effect over here is going to affect me. And so then I want that advance information that I get here from the international forecaster, and I read it, and I say to myself, oh, so if Christmas sales are going to be off by 5% or something like that, and it's going to affect me here, then maybe I don't want to buy a new car. You know what that means to you guys in Detroit building those cars? See, those poor Christmas sales at Macy's in New York, filter down through the food chain to Isabella, Missouri, and it says Georgie Gordon could buy a new car. He's got the money. But he's not going to buy a new car this year because he's afraid of what might be in the cards next year. And maybe I better save my money for something more important next year, like paying the rent. You know, paying the rent, buying groceries, might be more important than a new Corvette or a new Lexus or something. So retailers, as they always do, are pronouncing great Christmas sales, but they lie a lot. Now, analysts have been raising their predictions for holiday spending ever since the back-to-school shopping season was stronger than most had expected. But the people who actually work at the companies that ship and transport retailers' goods are not nearly as optimistic about holiday sales. When retailers expect that Americans will be crowding into their stores, their orders pile into the nation's ports in August and September for delivery to stores by late October. But the logistics companies say that that's not happening this year. In fact, the five busiest container ports in the United States said that imports in August of 2011 were lower or even with the 2010 volume. So the retailers are telling you, oh, we're expecting great sales for Christmas. Everything's fine. Don't worry about the economy. Everything's great. Just listen to Scott Pelley and Brian Williams. You know, everything's great. But the reality of life is when you unload the containers in Los Angeles and Long Beach and New Orleans, and then you count up the number of containers that are coming in here from overseas, where we get most of our stuff, by the way, since we've exported about 50% or more of our industry to China and other places. In 1960, our economy was 63% manufacturing and 37% everything else. Today, our economy is 13% manufacturing and 87% everything else, excluding you 14 million unemployed people that aren't working in manufacturing or everything else. And the Chinese and Japanese and Formosans and Koreans and others have your jobs now. Now, they weren't thinking very far ahead when they took your job and sent it over to South Korea. The executives and the senators and representatives and the president of the United States back in the 60s and 70s and 80s when they were doing all of this outsourcing and offshoring, they weren't thinking ahead. It made good sense then, and it might even make good sense now for some, but with 14 million people unemployed, what are those 14 million people going to do? Well, they're not going to be building and making and manufacturing all those things that are made in China, are they? This offshoring and outsourcing is real good for Chinese. It's not so good for you people in Youngstown, Ohio, now, is it? And the offshoring and the outsourcing is going on today, full speed ahead, just like it has been for the last 40 years. Nothing's changed. The ultimate end to that is that of the 13% that's left, about 90% of that will be outsourced. There are some things that cannot be outsourced here. For instance, my daughter called me the other day. We were chit-chatting a little bit, and she's training five Mexican ladies to do accounting work for the company that she works for. Now, my daughter trained an Indian woman some years back to take her job at the bank. So she left that bank and went to work for another bank, and then she trained that Indian woman to take her job at that bank. And now she went to work for another company. It's not a bank, it's a manufacturing company. And it's called Honeywell. Honeywell, they make instruments. And now she's training five Mexican ladies to take her job. Maybe it takes five Mexicans, I don't know. But anyway, that's her job. And one of these days she's going to be have her job outsourced to Mexico City. And it makes all the sense in the world, you know, for the corporation to do that. Why should they pay my daughter $80,000 a year to do what they can pay a Mexican to do for 10? In fact, in Silicon Valley, they're outsourcing jobs now to India. And Americans are leaving the United States and going to India and giving up their $100,000 and $80,000 and $60,000 jobs in San Francisco and South City and Burlingame and San Jose, and they're going to India and working for $10,000 a year. And they report that they live better in India on $10,000 a year than they do in San Francisco on $100,000 a year. As old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. Well, again, you know, you can't really blame the manufacturing companies. Let's think about this for a minute. Some years back, Ted Kennedy was just up in arms because the Stanley Corporation, which at that time, Stanley makes tools, and they make good tools. Stanley tools are the top of the line. You know, they're like Milwaukee, you know, and Porter Cable. They're just right there at the top of the feeding frenzy, you know. And one day, while this Ted Kennedy was complaining about Stanley moving their operation to some foreign country, I went over to the Theodosia hardware store to buy a 25-foot tape measure. And it was $3.65. I couldn't believe the price, $3.65. And then I got to comparing. The Stanley tape was $12. And here was this $3.65 tape. It wasn't marked Stanley. I don't know if it was Acme or Ajax or what the brand was. But I compared the two, and I couldn't tell the difference between them. I figured they were both made by the same Chinese company. One of them marked Stanley and the other one Ajax. Well, anyway, I bought the $3.65 tape because I wanted to see if it was any good. And it was just as good as, and maybe better than, I don't know. But it wasn't any poorer than the Stanley, which cost, you know, nearly three times as much, you know, four bucks versus 12. Now, I'm not opposed to paying $12 for a Stanley tape, but if I have a tape that's just as good as for $4, why shouldn't I keep the other $8 so I can spend it down at Winchell's Donuts? And that's what you think, and that's what I think, and that's what everybody else thinks. So don't get mad at Stanley. Get mad at the Congress for allowing the Chinese to sell their goods in this country without any duties, without any import or export taxes. See how simple that is? See, time was in America, if you were a Frenchman and you wanted to sell wine in the United States and compete against the wine producers of the Napa Valley in California. You could do that. You could sell your French wine in this country all day long. It's just that you had to pay the difference between your cheap French wine and the expensive California wine in tax to the government. And then you could put your French wine on the counter, and then it was $4 a bottle. And then the California grower could put his wine on the counter, and it was $4 a bottle, and you could choose. And if you wanted French imported wine, fine. But the wine grower in California didn't have to pay any income tax because our federal government was financed by these import taxes. Then in 1913, some whiz kids got into Washington, and they said, well, that's a bad plan. What we want to do is we want to have free trade, we want to knock off all the import taxes, and we want to tax the wine grower in California. So today, they let the cheap French wine come into the country for $2.50 a bottle, charge them no tax, and they can compete against the wine grower in California who charges $4 a bottle. So you and I say, well, let's buy the French wine because it's cheaper. And then the California guy has to pay the income tax to finance the federal government. Isn't that special? I don't know who thought that up, and I don't know why we made that change. I thought that the old system of letting the foreigners finance our government expenses was a better plan, but you know, I'm not college trained, and so I haven't been to the university where I could get real smart and figure out why it's advantageous to ship our jobs off to China while we flip burgers at Burger King or collect unemployment checks. But then, you know, that's what happens when you get higher education. You get real smart. You can figure things out like that. Now, key parts of the U.S. supply chain have some troubling news. The traditional holiday peak in shipping volumes has disappeared. And both the Port of Los Angeles and the Port of Long Beach, which together account for 40% of the imports into the United States, say that the rise in shipments that typically begins in July and lasts through early fall didn't happen this year. Instead, Dick Stinke, the executive director of the Port of Long Beach, says shipping volumes have posted two consecutive months of declines, and he's anticipating a double-digit drop for September. The last time the port experienced no peak was during the height of the recession in 2009. He says before that the phenomenon was never reported. It was unprecedented. So, the recession levels of 2009 is the report that we're getting from the imports coming into Long Beach. All right, so now I'm sitting here in Isabella, Missouri. The retailers are telling me everything's fine, get ready to spend, spend, spend. Then I read the forecaster and he says, now hang on a second, let me report on the imports that are coming in. Their volume is down to recession levels of 2009. Now what does that tell you? It tells us that the economy is going down to the recession level of 2009, doesn't it? Well, that's what it tells me. Now, I listen to Brian Williams every night and Scott Pelley. I pay a lot of attention to the news. But I don't believe everything I hear from Scott and see from Brian. And I pay attention to what I see here in the underground papers. And then I compare the two. And then when the mainstream press, after all is said and done, reports to me that Christmas sales this year are off, you know, a certain amount. Then I say, uh-huh. Well, who was it that reported that to me? Brian or Bob? So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, I don't report on these newsletters every week. I just do this, you know, about once every few months. So let me give you the name and number again. This guy's name is Bob Chapman. This is the International Forecaster. And this is the October 15th, 2011 edition. This is current events. This is one of the topics that I cover here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Remember, we talk about science and we talk about the Bible and we talk about current events and we talk about law. There's all kinds of things we talk about, and this is one of those things called current events. And to stay abreast of what the hell's going on in the world and who it is that's sticking it to you, you need one of these underground newsletters, one of these private newsletters. And the one that I put at the top of the list is the International Forecaster. Number two is the Privateer. Number three is the World Affairs Brief. Number four I put down as the Money Changer. Number five is the McIlvaney Intelligence Advisor, in that order. Not that I think Don McIlvaney is some kind of a lowlife or anything like that, but you know, if I had to appraise five cars, you know, like a Chevrolet, a Ford, a Dodge, a Honda, and a Toyota, I would list them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All five of them are good cars. All five of them are a little different. All five of them do little different things. You know, you might want a Honda rather than a Chevrolet, or vice versa. But I would rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, not because they're bad. They're all good products. It's just that this is the one that I rely on the most, and this is the one that I'm analyzing, and that's called the internationalforecaster.com. It's all one word. So if you'll go get online here and you plug in theinternationalforecaster.com, that'll give you his website. If you want to send him an email for some reason, like, well, how much is this thing? I think it's $160 a year. It's about 6 cents a page. It's the cheapest one of the newsletters on a per page, you know, analysis. And you're going to get much more information. You're not going to get the same information that you'd get from World Affairs Briefs or from the Privateer and et cetera. There's some things that he doesn't report on that they do. And that's why I get five here. But that doesn't mean that you need all five. It means that you need one or two or three. If you could afford all five, I'd recommend all five. But if you only afford one, this is the one that you want right here. TheInternationalForecaster.com. All right, so now, where is the economy? It's headed down, and they're talking about the double dip. Have you heard that? Double dip. And we'll tuck that one away in your heart, because this double dip is underway right now. And that's where we're headed, is for further recession. Not that the recession was ever over to start with. We went into recession, and we've stayed there for the last 3 years. And what the government is doing is printing a lot of money and spending it, which raises the gross domestic product. And that's the way they measure the economy, by how many dollars do all of us Americans buy, sell, and trade with during the year. Well, let me show you a little trick to that. Let's suppose that I'm selling water beds for $300 a bed, and I'm making 100 beds, and I sell them for $300 each. Let's go 100 times 300. That's $30,000. Now, let's suppose that I raise my prices by $100 a bed to $400, and I make the same 100 beds. Okay? So that's 100 times $400 a bed. That's $40,000. Well, my goodness, look at that. We have increased our economy by 25% this year. We have now produced 100 beds for $40,000 instead of 100 beds for $30,000. That's the way they count their beans in Washington. Let me ask you the question, how many more beds did we make? None. We didn't make any more beds. Same volume of beds, same amount of goods and services, but we charged more for it. Now, that's what happens when government creates more money and spends it into circulation. Got 25% higher prices. We don't have any more goods and services on the shelves. Now, isn't that just real special? In fact, I could even produce 90 beds. And if I produced 90 beds times 400, our economy would have grown by 6,000. That's $6,000. And we actually produced 10% less product. So we live 10% poorer, pay 6% more. Isn't that special? I'm about out of time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, around the world, in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. And there's the signal that says I've got to leave it right there, so I'm going to leave it and remind you that we'll be back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So, until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.